Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-decision episode of SCOTUScast, Outdated Manuals and Determining Intellectual Disability Edition. I'm your host, Bridget Flaherty. On March 28, 2017, the Supreme Court decided Moore v. Texas, a habeas corpus dispute regarding the scope of the Supreme Court's 2002 decision in Atkins v. Virginia, that the execution of a mentally disabled person would violate the Eighth Amendment's prescription on cruel and unusual punishments. Bobby James Moore was convicted of capital murder and sentenced to death for fatally shooting a sales clerk during a failed robbery attempt. Finding Moore to be intellectually disabled under current medical diagnostic standards set forth in the latest editions of the American Association of Intellectual and Developmental Disabilities, AAIDD Manual, and the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, and invoking Atkins, a state court recommended granting Moore habeas relief in the form of life imprisonment or a new trial. The Texas Court of Criminal Appeals, however, rejected that recommendation based on its 2004 decision in Ex parte Briseno, which relied on standards set forth in a predecessor manual to the AAIDD and a series of evidentiary factors. The Court of Criminal Appeals ultimately determined that Moore had failed to establish significantly subaverage intellectual functioning and denied relief. By a vote of 5-3, the Supreme Court vacated the judgment of the Court of Criminal Appeals and remanded the case. In an opinion authored by Justice Ginsburg, the Supreme Court held that the Court of Criminal Appeals had failed to comply with the requirements of the Eighth Amendment and Supreme Court precedents. By rejecting the habeas court's application of contemporary medical guidance and clinging to outdated and non-clinical factors set forth in Briseno, the Supreme Court indicated the Court of Criminal Appeals had failed adequately to inform itself of the medical community's diagnostic framework as required by the Supreme Court's 2014 decision in Hall v. Florida. Justice Ginsburg's majority opinion was joined by Justice Kennedy, Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan. The Chief Justice dissented, joined by Justices Thomas and Alito. And now, to discuss the case, we have Joan Marie Davoli.
Moore and two accomplices robbed a grocery store in Texas. During that robbery, Moore shot the 70-year-old victim in his head, killing him instantly. Moore then fled the state, hid in Louisiana, where he was ultimately found 10 days after the murder. He was returned to Texas, tried for capital murder, and sentenced to death. The issue of his intellectual ability was not raised back in 1980 for purposes of arguing he was ineligible for the death penalty because the Supreme Court did not address intellectual disability until 2002. So this case, similar to many cases about the death penalty that come before the Supreme Court, is really about the issue of who can be executed under the Eighth Amendment, which prohibits cruel and unusual punishments. And one issue that's come out of the Eighth Amendment is who can be executed. Can everyone be executed if they commit crimes that are deemed eligible for capital punishment? The Supreme Court has said no, not everyone. So one limitation is, first of all, the scope of the type of crimes for which an individual can be executed. And the Supreme Court has also limited the type of defendants who are eligible for execution. So back in 1989, the Supreme Court held that individuals who were under the age of 16 at the time of the offense could not be executed, and that was altered in 2005. The Supreme Court said no one under the age of 18 at the time of the offense was eligible for execution. So prior to that, prior to 2005, there had been individuals who were under the age of 18 at the time of the offense who were in fact executed. After 2005, that could not occur. So that's one line of cases dealing with who can be executed. And so this case, the Moore case, comes from the prohibition against execution of the intellectually disabled. So in 2002, the Supreme Court for the first time held that defendants who at that time the court referred to them as mentally retarded, who were mentally retarded, are not eligible for execution. Since 2010, after Rosa's Law, the federal code uses the word intellectual disability, replacing the term mentally retarded. And so the Atkins case, while it uses the term mentally retarded, subsequent cases refer to the Atkins rule as prohibiting execution of individuals who are intellectually disabled. At the time of the Atkins case in 2002, the Supreme Court said that there was serious disagreement in determining which offenders are in fact mentally retarded. But the court left it up to the states the task of developing appropriate ways to enforce the restriction on the execution of the mentally retarded. So Atkins was leaving that determination up to the individual states. They didn't define the term then mentally retarded, now intellectually disabled. And of course, similar to any type of rule, the cases that come up after Atkins really focus on the cases that are close together. So, for example, there are going to be many defendants who everyone will agree is clearly intellectually disabled. They fall on one side that is clear and obvious, and there are other defendants who are clearly and obviously not intellectually disabled. So it's the cases that are close to the line. Is this person, in fact, intellectually disabled or not? Those are the cases that the court was talking about when they were saying we're leaving this up to the states, even though there's great disagreement. So one area that pretty much universally has been agreed upon is that the diagnosis of intellectual disability requires three things. First of all, significantly sub-average intellectual functioning, and that's what everyone refers to as an IQ score. So most places recognize that to be below 70. Sometimes people consider below 75 to fulfill that diagnosis of intellectual disability. Secondly, adaptive functioning deficits. So adaptive functioning deficits are whether or not the person essentially can learn and function and in his world, in his society, what can the individual adapt to do? Do they understand consequences? Can they be taught to read? Those sorts of things. Can you take care of yourself? Can you get up and dressed and live your life? Or do you have some deficits in any of the abilities to function? Three, an onset during childhood before reaching the age of 18. So in order to get that diagnosis of intellectual disability, there must be evidence that the individual prior to reaching 18, in fact, was intellectually disabled. So after Atkins, the states did, in fact, apply different types of tests to determine whether or not someone was intellectually disabled. And the Supreme Court's most recent case prior to Moore v. Texas was a 2014 case, Hall versus Florida, where the court ruled that even though we're leaving the determination of the rules concerning intellectual disability, Florida's bright line IQ test could not stand. What happened in Florida was the defendant had to demonstrate an IQ of 70 or less prior to being allowed to introduce evidence of intellectual disability, and Hall's IQ was 71. So the Supreme Court held that a state's legal determination of intellectual disability must be informed by the medical community's diagnostic framework. And there the court was saying the diagnostic framework looks at more than just an IQ test. Similarly, in this case, Moore asserts that he's intellectually disabled, which should bar his execution. And Texas claimed that Moore did not fulfill the definition that Texas used for intellectual disability. Specifically, Texas argued the Atkins case in 2002 never required states to consider current medical standards when evaluating claims of intellectual disability. because, again, Atkins had left that up to the states, and that, in fact, nothing in either Atkins or Hall required states to employ clinical definitions of intellectual disability, much less requires them to employ the same underlying analysis that professional organizations currently use to determine who is, in fact, intellectually disabled. So in Moore's case, Texas was relying upon some factors developed in a Texas case, Ex parte Briseno, which involved a set of 1992 standards for evaluating intellectual disability, along with seven evidentiary factors that took into account several different things, including whether the people who knew the inmate best when he was growing up regarded him as intellectually disabled. So Briseno sort of looked at a much wider group of factors to determine this, including sort of these real-life applications or what other people thought about the defendant when he was a child, whether or not he was in fact mentally disabled. Did his conduct show leadership, or does it show that he is led around, and had the person demonstrate an ability to follow through with plans? So the Supreme Court in this case determined that, in fact, the Ex parte Briseno factors combined with the 1992 standards for evaluating intellectual disability did not, in fact, fulfill the Eighth Amendment requirement that the analysis of whether or not the defendant was intellectually disabled was fulfilled. The standards from Ex parte Briseno were simply out of date, is one simple way of looking at this. The 1992 standards are not what anyone is using currently to determine whether or not an individual is intellectually disabled. And the Supreme Court points out that Texas doesn't even use those standards from 1992 for anything except to determine who's eligible for execution. So in any other area in Texas, if you're looking for benefits or whether or not special ed is required for children, Texas doesn't rely upon these old standards. In fact, Texas looks to newer standards where the medical and psychological community have determined that, in fact, the individual is intellectually disabled. So what the court is essentially requiring here is very similar to what the court says in Hall, and that is that when the state is evaluating an individual for the intellectual disability, the state must, in fact, apply current medical standards for diagnosing intellectual disability. The state cannot rely upon antiquated standards. The state still retains the right to determine whether or not someone is intellectually disabled. However, even though they have some flexibility, there is not going to be unfettered discretion in enforcing Atkins holding. The medical community's current standards essentially differ from the older standards. So the Supreme Court, in finding the Texas determination of intellectual disability to be flawed, said that, in fact, the court determination of intellectual disability must consider Moore's adaptive functioning in light of his IQ evidence. So Moore's IQ, there were different tests of. Some were over 70. Those are the ones that were determined the most reliable. A few of them were under the number 70. But the Supreme Court said, we look beyond that. The number, again, as we said in Hall versus Florida, is not the cutoff point. It's simply one factor in the analysis. And that the analysis of the adaptive functioning really focused, in the lower courts in Texas, focused on Moore's ability. However, the Supreme Court said that the medical community focuses the adaptive functioning inquiry on adaptive deficits. In other words, the lower court looked too closely at what Moore was able to do, but did not look at what he was unable to do. The court also criticized Texas for relying on adaptive strengths developed in a controlled setting, such as prison, where Moore has been as I said, for 37 years, and over 30 years at the time that he raised the issue of mental retardation. So all of his adaptive strengths, they said, were in that controlled prison setting. And the court said, in fact, that type of evidence is not as valuable as looking at where he had deficits in his adaptive functioning. The court said that Moore's record of academic failure, along with childhood abuse and suffering he endured, detracted from this determination that his intellectual and adaptive deficits were related. Therefore, the court said that clinicians rely on those types of factors, such as his childhood of abuse, to explore the prospect of intellectual disability further, not to essentially claim that there was no disability. The court also talked briefly about mental health professionals currently also recognizing that the intellectually challenged individuals also have other mental or physical impairments. So there's often these dual diagnoses, and that it's not that because Moore perhaps suffered from, for example, difficulty learning to read, that resulted from childhood abuse, that didn't also result from mental retardation or intellectual disability. So there were many different factors, the court saying, that experts today agree upon as demonstrating intellectual disability that were not the case back in 1992 when the factors that are used by Texas were initially developed. What we learn from this case is the court has re-entered the Atkins arena, which has not been, I wouldn't say dormant many years, but certainly the court has treated as if the states were applying these rules independently. They were allowed to come up with their own application of how we determine whether or not someone is intellectually disabled. And back in 2014, and in this case, the court is saying, well, now, actually, yes, states, you still have the ability to come up with your definition of intellectual disability, but it must be informed by current medical understanding, and you must be using current medical standards. So that's been the big change here with Moore versus Texas, is that the court is giving more oversight to what states use when they determine whether or not someone is in fact intellectually disabled. The other significant part of this case is 37 years old. Moore has been on death row since 1980. And while the court didn't address that directly, certainly Texas's position was that it's a little late to claim that he's in fact intellectually disabled. However, I think that might be part of the reason that the court looked at this case again, not cited by the court, but cited in the petitioner's brief, was that Moore sustained a lot of his injuries to his head as a 13-year-old who was attacked when he and other black students were being part of the integration of the schools in Texas. One of his head injuries was sustained at that time. So it's an old case. It's a case with a racial component, and it's a case also with the mental intellectual disability component. So what the court has done in this case is remanded this back to Texas. Texas is going to have to have another hearing determining whether or not, in fact, under more modern standards, determined to be mentally, intellectually disabled, therefore falling under Atkins' ruling of no execution for individuals with intellectual disability. Thus, this case probably doesn't have much impact outside of Texas, because Texas is the only state that was relying upon these particular factors. Many other states rely on the more modern standards for determining intellectual disability, and it also probably, again, doesn't have much impact because so few cases are death penalty cases.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. SCOTUS Cast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.